Section 3. Healthy Living for the VHL Family. Whether a patient, caregiver, or family member, there are many factors that affect one's health. Some of these cannot be controlled, such as genetic makeup or age, while some lifestyle changes can be controlled. Three factors that can be controlled and can impact one's health status are 1. How much one moves, 2. What one eats, 3. How one cares for their emotional health. Everyday choices affect one's health and wellness. Choosing to be active, eat healthy foods, and improve one's emotional well-being are the most important investments to make in life. Strive for the best health possible in all areas of life by making mindful, healthy choices. Take charge of life. Nothing is more important than taking care of oneself. Set aside time every day for this purpose. Be active, enjoy hobbies, and share time with family and friends. Strive for balance in both personal and work life. Make time for important relationships in life. Ask for help whenever support from others is needed. Find ways to relieve stress, such as physical activity and relaxation techniques. Be open-minded to try something new, like a hobby or activity. Be open to speaking with a doctor who can provide resources and advice when needed. Such a doctor may be a family doctor or PCP. Keep in mind that any lifestyle change is a work in progress, and that lasting changes take time. Set small goals that are easy to add to daily life and take charge in order to accomplish them. VHL puts a person at greater risk for cancer, particularly renal cell carcinoma, RCC. An individual affected with VHL will have a higher baseline risk than someone in the general population because of their genetics. It has also been noted that taller adults, 4 inches or 10 centimeters taller than average, are at increased risk for RCC. Additional environmental and lifestyle factors can also contribute to RCC risk level. Smoking, hypertension, and obesity, as defined by waist size or waist-hip ratio, are major environmental and lifestyle risk factors associated with RCC, while diets rich in vegetables and low in red meat lower the risk. By taking steps to live a healthy lifestyle and avoid known risk factors, the risk of cancer can be reduced as much as possible. Figure 15. Factors increasing and decreasing RCC risk. Diagram by the VHL Alliance, copyright 2015. Factors increasing RCC risk: obesity, high blood pressure, tall height, VHL gene mutation. Factors reducing RCC risk: nutritious diet, no smoking, active lifestyle. End Figure 15. Speak with a medical professional before making major lifestyle changes. It is important to live a healthy lifestyle, but being healthy means different things for different people. Certain diets might not be appropriate for individuals with VHL, including those who have adrenal, pancreas, or kidney function problems. Someone with physical disabilities may be limited to moderate exercise. Meet with a doctor or healthcare provider before making significant lifestyle change or about concerns related to physical capabilities. Smoking and VHL. One of the greatest known risk factors for many medical conditions is smoking. People who smoke are also at higher risk for a number of post-operative complications. Smoking is not only hazardous to the user, but secondhand smoke is dangerous for those nearby. According to the UN World Health Organization, HWO, tobacco use kills 6 million people each year, of which more than one-tenth die from secondhand smoke. For everyone in the household, it is important to remove the contamination of the many toxic gases released in cigarette smoke from over 4,000 chemicals, of which at least 50 are known carcinogens. Smoking is known to accelerate cancer, kidney cancer in particular. Studies on kidney tumors in the general population indicate that patients who smoke, especially men, have more tumors than those who do not, and that those tumors grow more rapidly. Once an individual has stopped smoking for over 10 years, these elevated risks are reduced. Vaping and e-cigarettes should not be considered a risk-free alternative to smoking. They also should not be considered as a smoking cessation device. Studies show a wide variability in nicotine levels and other chemicals, which cause them to be hazardous to the user. People often use smoking as a method of stress control. Smokers who have VHL and their family members, especially if there is something tense going on, will need to replace smoking with another, healthier method of stress management. Support groups, a telephone buddy, or daily text messages are a way of keeping on track. Healthy snacks can help to ease the hand-mouth habit that often accompanies smoking. The bottom line is, getting tobacco out of the house and out of everyone's life is important to the health of the individual as well as the health of the entire family. Diet. Note: these are general suggestions and may not be appropriate for those with compromised adrenal, kidney, or pancreas function. Please see specific suggestions under each of those sections and work with your medical team. General nutrition. The role of diet and nutrition in lowering the risk of developing cancer has been discussed and studied for nearly a century. The American Cancer Society's published guidelines include recommendations for healthy living for reducing cancer risk. Obesity, assessed using Body Mass Index, BMI, increases risk of renal cell carcinoma. Consumption of antioxidants, vitamins C, E, and carotenoids, vitamin D, and alcohol in moderation, along with increased physical activity or exercise, have been reported to protect against RCC. Higher intakes of fruits and vegetables guard against both RCC and pancreatic cancer. Unless recommended by a healthcare team, it is best not to use supplements, but to rely instead on whole foods to get the appropriate balance of essential vitamins and minerals. Healthy eating is not about strict nutrition philosophies, staying unrealistically thin, or depriving oneself of one's favorite foods. Rather, it is about feeling great, having more energy, stabilizing one's mood, and keeping oneself as healthy as possible, all of which can be achieved by learning some nutrition basics and using them in a way that works. Try expanding the range of healthy food choices and learn how to plan ahead to create and maintain a tasty, healthy diet. To set up for success, think about planning a healthy diet as a number of small, manageable steps rather than one big, drastic change. If one approaches the changes gradually and with commitment, they will most likely have a healthy diet sooner than anticipated. People often think of healthy eating as an all-or-nothing proposition. But a key foundation for any healthy diet is moderation. The goal of healthy eating is to develop a diet that one can maintain for life, not just a few weeks or months, or until a predetermined weight is reached. Try to think of moderation in terms of balance. Everyone needs a balance of carbohydrates, protein, fat, fiber, vitamins, and minerals to sustain a healthy body. Healthy eating is about more than the food on one's plate. It is also about how one thinks about food. Healthy eating habits can be learned, and it is important to slow down and think about food as nourishment, rather than just something to gulp down in between meetings or on the way to pick up the kids. Food should not be a reward for oneself or others. The Healthy Eating Plate from the Harvard School of Public Health incorporates new learning about nutrition, health, and cancer prevention. What one eats affects how one feels. Basing a diet on plant foods, like vegetables, fruits, whole grains, and legumes, such as beans, and choosing nutritious foods and drinks is one of the best ways to stay healthy. Figure 16. Healthy Eating Plate. Source, Willett et al., Harvard School of Public Health, 2011. Healthy Eating Plate. Healthy Oils. Use healthy oils like olive and canola oil for cooking, on salad, and at the table. Limit butter. Avoid trans fat. Vegetables. The more veggies and the greater the variety, the better. Potatoes and French fries don't count. Fruits. Eat plenty of fruits of all colors. Water. Drink water, tea, or coffee with little or no sugar. Limit milk/dairy, 1 to 2 servings per day, and juice, 1 small glass per day. Avoid sugary drinks. Whole grains. Eat a variety of whole grains, like whole wheat bread, whole grain pasta, and brown rice. Limit refined grains, like white rice and white bread. Healthy protein. Choose fish, poultry, beans, and nuts. Limit red meat and cheese. Avoid bacon, cold cuts, and other processed meats. End Figure 16. Sugar and cancer. Is there a link? Not a direct link, no. Sugar does not cause cancer to grow or spread more quickly. However, a diet that leads to rapid changes in blood sugar level has been associated with both increased cancer risk, colorectal and endometrial cancers, and poorer outcomes. The effect of foods on blood sugar levels is measured by the glycemic load. Glycemic load is based on the serving size of the food, so a food such as an orange may have sugar, measured as glycemic index, but the amount eaten in one serving will not require your body to release much insulin to handle it. Foods with a lower glycemic load provide a steadier release of energy and may keep you from feeling hungry soon after eating. These foods also do not cause spikes in your blood insulin levels, which may be a risk factor in the development of type 2 diabetes. Physical activity. Be physically active for at least 30 minutes every day. Regular activity has been shown to decrease cancer risk and improve outcomes for those with cancer. Physical activity also improves cancer-related fatigue, anxiety, self-esteem, physical functioning, and various aspects of quality of life, including stress relief. Exercise can also improve muscle strength and body composition while reducing the risk of heart disease and diabetes. There is no evidence to indicate that VHL patients should limit their physical activities in any way, except for short periods following treatments or surgery. Speak with a healthcare provider about exercise tolerance. Moderate exercise, however, is good for everyone, but it is not good to overdo it. Exercise is important for everyone at every age. It is important to begin the habit of regular physical activity in childhood. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, recommends 1 hour or more of physical activity per day for children and adolescents. This physical activity needs to include aerobic activity, walking, running, or swimming, muscle strengthening, gymnastics or calisthenics, and bone strengthening, weight bearing. Although many children and teens already meet this guideline, a substantial portion do not. Efforts are needed to engage them in the many sports and fun activities that will ensure that they meet these goals. Guidelines for adults from the American Heart Association recommend at least 30 minutes of aerobic activity 5 days per week, plus moderate to high-intensity muscle strengthening activity at least 2 days per week. The recommended total time can be split up into two or three segments of 10 or 15 minutes, allowing short walks to meet your aerobic exercise goal. A study published in the journal Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise found that people aged 60 and over have to work out more than people under the age of 60 to maintain muscle mass. However, workouts can be tough for those in that age group, ages 60 to 75 in the study, especially since joints are often more susceptible to injury at older ages. Low-impact activities and exercises that do not require a gym or special equipment can help with this problem and provide opportunities for exercise that are accessible and feasible for everyone. Regular physical activity can help keep your thinking, learning, and judgment skills sharp as one ages. It can also reduce risk of depression and may improve sleep. Research has shown that doing aerobics or a mix of aerobic and muscle strengthening activities 3 to 5 times a week for 30 to 60 minutes can provide mental health benefits. Some scientific evidence has also shown that even lower levels of physical activity can still be beneficial. Recent research indicates that in addition to regular exercise, it may be important to avoid long periods of sitting. This means that as much as possible, it is important to stand or move instead of sit. Exercising can be performed watching television or by standing while working at the computer or having a meeting while walking. It is recommended to get up and move for 1 to 3 minutes every half hour. Emotional health. Stress can creep up everywhere in life. It can come from the frustration of a traffic jam or a confrontation with a partner. Stress can be spurred by money worries or spiked by a sudden health scare. It is inevitable for everyone, particularly someone directly or indirectly impacted by a long-term medical condition such as VHL. Feelings of anxiety or worry can arise in response to our perceived stress. Anxiety or worry may be triggered by events such as the diagnosis, decisions on when to operate, and thoughts about future health. Scanxiety is a known phenomenon that occurs when preparing for annual scans, as well as while waiting for the follow-up reports. It can exact a toll, physically and emotionally. The human brain is hardwired with an alarm system for your protection. When the brain perceives a threat, it signals the body to release a burst of hormones to fuel its capacity for a response. This has been labeled the fight or flight response. A physical reaction is triggered by the brain in response to a stressor. Once the threat or source of stress is gone, the body is meant to return to a normal, relaxed state. Unfortunately, the non-stop stress of modern life, particularly when dealing with a long-term medical condition, means that the alarm system rarely shuts off. Stress management provides a range of tools to reset the alarm system. Stress is a fact of life, but you determine how it affects your life. You can counteract the damaging effects of stress by calling upon your body's rich potential for self-healing. The VHL Alliance's wellness coaching program can help you develop valuable techniques to deal with stress. vhl.org/wellness-coaching. Stress. What is stress? Stress describes what people feel when they are under mental, physical, or emotional pressure. Stress is the demands that people perceive, whereas distress, anxiety, depression, worry, is the emotional response to these stressors. Although it is normal to experience some mental stress from time to time, people who experience high levels of stress or who experience it repeatedly over a long period of time may develop health problems, mental and/or physical. The body responds to physical, mental, or emotional pressure in the same way, by releasing stress hormones, such as epinephrine and norepinephrine, produced by the adrenal glands, that increase blood pressure, speed heart rate, and raise blood sugar levels. These changes help a person act with greater strength and speed to escape a perceived threat. Cortisol is a hormone that helps regulate the inflammatory response in the body. Cortisol is produced by the adrenal glands in response to stress. Under normal circumstances, cortisol levels should be high in the morning and drop throughout the course of the day. But studies have shown that among people experiencing chronic stress or depressive symptoms, cortisol levels can remain sustained throughout the day, with less of a decrease than normal in the evening. For people who are living without adrenals or adrenal function, supplementing with a replacement steroid is mandatory. Everyone experiences stress. While some events can be more stressful than others, the average person faces stress on a daily basis. The stress of typical daily activities and responsibilities is often intensified by the stressor of chronic genetic conditions like VHL. Living with VHL or having a loved one affected with VHL can be a significant source of stress. VHL is a lifelong challenge that is taxing not only for the patient, but for every member of the household. While symptoms of and issues related to VHL may not affect one's life on a day-to-day basis, every once in a while they will come up and demand attention. Feeling out of control and not knowing what to expect can put a significant amount of stress on someone, which in turn sustains the health problems that come with VHL. Managing the stress of living with VHL and/or caring for someone affected with VHL is an important part of self-care. Join a discussion call to talk out frustrations with other people in your situation and to get helpful ideas. Patient support groups are available online, such as the VHLA Facebook group. facebook.com/groups/VHL awareness. The VHL Alliance also offers numerous support discussion calls, including a VHL patient/caregiver call, vhl.org/ptcg call, parents of VHLers call, vhl.org/parents call, VHL low/no vision call, vhl.org/low/no vision call. To learn more about support offerings, visit the website at vhl.org/support or contact VHLA at 617-277-5667, extension 4. How does stress affect health? Research has shown that people who experience intense and long-term stress can have digestive problems, fertility problems, urinary problems, and a weakened immune system. People who experience chronic stress are also more prone to viral infections, such as the flu or common cold, and are more likely to have headaches, sleep trouble, depression, and anxiety. Stress makes the body unresponsive to cortisol, and the hormone loses its effectiveness in regulating inflammation. Inflammation is a good thing when it is triggered as part of the body's effort to fight infection, but chronic inflammation can promote the development and progression of many illnesses, including depression, heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. The buildup of stress can often feed or cause anxiety and depression. Practicing stress management techniques may bring some relief from anxiety and symptoms of depression. However, it is important to seek advice from a licensed social worker or medical professional, including your primary care physician. They may be able to recommend a combination of medications and counseling, as well as a mind-body program or other stress management approaches. Is there a link between cancer and emotional stress like anxiety and depression? Although the research linking stress and risk factors for cancer is controversial, stress is known to affect biological processes that are critical to help control cancer growth. A team of researchers led by Dr. Lorenzo Cohen, professor and director of integrative medicine at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, found that symptoms of depression among a group of patients with late-stage RCC were associated with an increased risk of death. The probable mechanism found by the study was that the patients with chronic stress and depressive symptoms had higher cortisol levels than normal, which were also associated with an increased risk of mortality. The team also found increased inflammatory gene expression in the most depressed patients. VHL and family distress. It is important to talk with one's family about how one is feeling. Generally speaking, these discussions are not a burden to the other. It is an approach for helping others to understand, help, and participate. In general, it can be less stressful for everyone if everyone is dealing with VHL together. One shouldn't always feel obligated to shy away from asking for help or counseling. VHL is not a punishment. It is a medical condition. It is not one's fault, and it is not something one can control. A 2010 study in the Netherlands evaluated the prevalence of distress among VHL family members and identified factors that are significantly associated with such distress. Approximately 40% of the VHL family members reported clinically relevant levels of distress. These levels of distress were reported by 50% of the carriers and, interestingly, by 36% of the non-carriers. Having lost a first-degree relative to VHL during adolescence was a significant factor in heightened levels of distress. For this reason, the authors recommended that special attention be given to individuals who have lost a close relative due to VHL during adolescence. Stress on relationships. Living with VHL can be a very stressful experience. There are very real mental and physical challenges that come with the disease, its effects, and its treatment. Individuals who are affected with VHL may feel the strain in different ways. It is normal to go through stages of denial, anger, guilt, and other painful emotions. It is normal to feel more needful and to be angry when your family does not automatically understand your needs. Unaffected members of the family will feel their own strains, anger, and guilt. Unaffected children may be angry that the affected child gets all the attention, or may feel guilty that they do not have VHL. Affected or not, children often harbor unspoken fears for themselves or for their family members, which may come out as misbehavior or school performance issues. Schools often have social workers or psychologists who can be called upon to assist children. In some areas, there are support groups for children whose families are affected by cancer or chronic illness. The VHL Handbook Kids Edition, vhl.org/product/vhl-handbook-kids-edition, can be used to help explain VHL to all of the children in your family. caregiver needs, and stress. A chronic disease like VHL can put strain on even the healthiest of relationships. Partners are often the main suppliers of social support for patients and those at high risk, and social support is known to be a buffer for distress. Therefore, if partners are distressed, they may be incapable of providing sufficient support to the high-risk spouse and vice versa. For this reason, it is important to address the emotional and psychological well-being of both. The 2011 study in the Netherlands asked partners of individuals diagnosed with VHL to complete a questionnaire assessing distress, worries, and health-related quality of life. Of the 50 respondents, 25% showed signs of clinically relevant levels of distress and in need of emotional support or counseling. The majority, 76%, of partners in the study believed that such support should be made available to them and be routinely offered to both individuals with VHL and their partners. In general, emotional support is directed toward the patients. As such, distress experienced by partners may remain undetected and untreated. It is important to acknowledge and be aware of the needs of the partner, allowing them to seek needed support. Additional studies further illustrate the personal challenges of caregiving. The results of a national poll conducted in 2013 by AARP found that of the 1,036 adult caregivers who responded to the poll, one-third reported feeling sad or depressed, and 44% reported ignoring or bottling up their emotions. Additionally, 38% of respondents said they slept less since becoming a caregiver, 24% ate more, 33% reported avoiding decision-making, and a third of caregiver respondents reported isolating themselves by avoiding people or social situations. Caring for others is not easy, and burnout is common. Caregivers may often wrestle with stress as well as exhaustion, anger, guilt, grief, and other difficult emotions. It is common to feel stressed and overwhelmed. Studies show that those responsible for the long-term care of relatives show higher rates of illness, suppressed immune response, slower healing, and there is even increased mortality among caregivers. In order to give care, everyone needs stress relief, support, and time for themselves and the family. It is important to share one's feelings with others who can help, or speak with a counselor or social worker. The VHL Alliance has some great support resources for caregivers, including the VHL Caregiver Connect Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/VHL Caregivers, VHL Parents to Parents Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/VHL2Parents, Parents of VHLers Call, vhl.org/parents call, vhlpatient/caregiver call, vhl.org/ptcg call, VHLA Wellness Coaching Program, vhl.org/wellness-coaching. Many people who were once caregivers say they did too much on their own. Some wished that they had asked for help sooner. Be honest about what and how much one can do. Think about tasks that can be given to others and let go of tasks that aren't important at this time. Protect one's own health. Boost resistance by eating well, getting enough rest and exercise, and pursuing activities that bring pleasure. Practice self-care. Make time for oneself and one's needs. Consider the airplane analogy. Put on your own oxygen mask before helping others. It is important to take care of oneself before one can effectively care for others. It is not selfish. It is vital. Combat caregiver stress. Relaxation response techniques and self-nurturing techniques will enable one to feel calmer, happier, and better able to help others. Make time for relationships. Nearly all caregivers and their partners feel more stress than usual in their relationship. A couple can stay close in spite of dealing with medical issues. Staying close is also about sharing feelings and understanding. Accept help. If no one offers help, ask for it. When someone offers help, accept it. Spell out to family members what needs to be done and what sort of help would be best. Sometimes it is hard to ask or accept these types of offers of help, but it is important to do. In many ways, by accepting this incredible personal gift, one is actually helping the giver. Find support. Join a support group to talk out frustrations with other people in your situation and to get helpful ideas. Some caregiver support groups are available online. Contact the VHL Alliance to learn more about their discussion group offerings, including the VHL Partners Program and the telephone discussion groups. 617-277-5667, extension 4, or info@vhl.org. Stress prevention and management. In looking at the causes of stress, remember that the brain comes hardwired with an alarm system for one's protection. When the brain perceives a threat, it signals the body to release a burst of hormones to fuel its capacity for a response. This has been labeled the fight-or-flight response. Once the threat is gone, the body is meant to return to a normal, relaxed state. Unfortunately, the non-stop stress of modern life means that the body's alarm system rarely shuts off. That is why stress management is so important. It provides a range of tools to reset your alarm system. Without stress management, all too often the body is always on high alert. There are healthy and unhealthy ways to respond to stress. Healthy ways to deal with stress include exercise, relaxation techniques like meditation, yoga, etc., spending time outdoors, speaking with a friend, or playing with a pet. Unhealthy behaviors can include overeating or undereating, sleeping too much, drinking too much alcohol, smoking, lashing out at others in emotionally or physically violent outbursts, taking illegal drugs or self-medicating with prescription or over-the-counter drugs, and withdrawing from friends or partners. Becoming aware of how one typically handles stress can help one make healthy choices. Emotional and social support can help patients learn to cope with psychological stress. Such support can reduce levels of depression, anxiety, and disease and treatment-related symptoms among patients. Approaches to stress management can include the following: training in relaxation or stress management, techniques such as meditation, prayer, yoga, qigong, tai chi, counseling or talk therapy, social support in a group setting, medications for depression or anxiety, exercise, learning various techniques that elicit the relaxation response, such as breath focus and guided imagery, using cognitive restructuring, a method of helping reframe negative thoughts in order to cope more effectively with a difficult situation, nurturing yourself by setting aside time for socializing, relaxing, connecting with others, and pursuing activities that add joy to your life. Depression. Depression is a condition in which a person feels discouraged, sad, hopeless, unmotivated, or disinterested in life in general. When these feelings last for a short period of time, it may be a case of the blues. when such feelings last for more than 2 weeks, and when the feelings interfere with daily activities such as taking care of family, spending time with friends, or going to work or school, it is likely a depressive episode. Depression is the most common mood disorder. According to estimates by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, approximately 1 in every 10 adults reports some level of depression. Fortunately, depression is treatable. A combination of therapy and antidepressant medication can help ensure recovery. People with depression may experience the following signs and symptoms: sad or low mood most of the day, nearly every day; markedly diminished interest or pleasure in all or almost all activities most of the day, nearly every day; significant weight loss or gain when not dieting; or decrease/increase in appetite nearly every day; inability to sleep or sleeping too much; fatigue or loss of energy nearly every day; feelings of worthlessness or excessive or inappropriate guilt nearly every day; diminished ability to think or concentrate; recurrent thoughts of death, not just fear of dying, or of suicide without a specific plan, or a suicide attempt or specific plan for committing suicide. Depression and chronic illness. Depression is one of the most common complications of chronic illness. Even a person who is successfully managing their chronic illness may still be at risk for depression. The Rare Disease Impact Report published research showing that 75% of rare disease patients report that their disease caused their depression. Interestingly, 72% of caregivers to rare disease patients also reported feelings of depression. Facing a chronic illness naturally leads to feelings of uncertainty, grief, sadness, anger, or fear. When these feelings continue and disrupt quality of life and day-to-day functioning, depression may be the culprit. Chronic illness and depression are sometimes related to each other and can be thought of as a two-way street. A diagnosis of chronic illness can be depressing, and the increase in depressive feelings can exacerbate the illness. The risk of depression increases in proportion to the severity of the illness and the life disruption it causes. When symptoms of depression are present alongside symptoms of chronic illness, it is necessary to treat both, not just the symptoms of chronic illness. The treatment is similar to the recommended treatment for other people with depression. Anxiety. Most people feel depressed or anxious at times. Losing a loved one, getting laid off from a job, going through a divorce, living with lifelong health issues, and other difficult situations can lead a person to feel sad, lonely, scared, nervous, or anxious. These feelings are normal reactions to life's stressors. However, some people experience these feelings daily, or nearly daily, for no apparent reason, making it difficult to carry on with normal everyday functioning. These people may have an anxiety disorder, depression, or both. Depression and anxiety disorders are different, but people with depression often experience symptoms similar to those of an anxiety disorder, such as nervousness, irritability, and problems sleeping and concentrating. Each disorder has its own causes and its own emotional and behavioral symptoms. It is not uncommon for someone with an anxiety disorder to also suffer from depression, or vice versa. Nearly one half of those diagnosed with depression are also diagnosed with an anxiety disorder. The good news is that these disorders are both treatable, separately and together. The MyVHL Patient Natural History Study, vhl.org/myvhl, has identified that about 23% of VHL patients suffer from moderate to severe anxiety, while 16% suffer from mild anxiety. Post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, is also a common mental health diagnosis among people with VHL. People with generalized anxiety disorder, GAD, experience exaggerated worry and tension, often expecting the worst, even when there is no apparent reason for concern. They anticipate disaster and are overly concerned about money, health, family, work, or other issues. People with GAD cannot seem to get rid of their concerns, even though they usually realize that their anxiety is more intense than the situation warrants. They cannot relax, may startle easily, and/or have difficulty concentrating. Often they have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep. GAD is diagnosed when the person worries excessively about a variety of everyday problems for at least 6 months. GAD affects 6.8 million adults, or 3.1% of the U.S. population in any given year. The disorder develops gradually and can begin at any age, although the years of highest risk are between childhood and middle age. Physical symptoms that often accompany the anxiety include headaches, muscle tension, muscle aches, difficulty swallowing, trembling, twitching, irritability, sweating, nausea, lightheadedness, having to go to the bathroom frequently, feeling out of breath, hot flashes. Treating depression and anxiety. All VHL Clinical Care Center, CCC, specialists, regardless of specialty, should be evaluating each patient's emotional health and well-being at each appointment. Deciding whether or not to seek professional help. Anyone who feels like they may have challenges managing the stress associated with life in general and/or VHL specifically should consider getting psychosocial help. This offers people the opportunity to meet with someone who can validate their concerns and also provide them with tools to manage their stressors and distress. There are times when a person who is experiencing depression will get better on his own. But how does a person decide whether to seek professional help? Below are some questions for the person to consider. 1. Is the distress level intense enough that they want to do something about it? 2. Do they feel that they are no longer able to problem solve on their own? Do they feel the need for more support? 3. Is the level of distress such that it is negatively affecting their relationships, usual activities, or work? 4. Are they contemplating suicide? A person who answers yes to one or more of these questions may benefit from entering a counseling relationship with a professional. Individual counseling that includes talk therapy is beneficial for anyone living directly or indirectly with a chronic disease. Who treats depression and anxiety? Clinical social workers, psychologists, psychiatric nurses, and psychiatrists are the primary treatment providers for depression and anxiety. Each takes a different treatment approach, so it is important that each person finds what works best for them and meets their needs. In addition, there is a wide range of other professionals who can help, including primary care providers or internal medicine doctors, members of the clergy, and school guidance counselors. Treatment options. There are a wide range of treatment options for depression and anxiety, but they can generally be divided into three categories. Antidepressant medication, also used for anxiety alone, counseling alone, or a combination of antidepressant medication and counseling. Medication. There are a variety of antidepressant medications available, but they can be separated into two main categories: tricyclic antidepressants, TCAs, and selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs, are frequently used to treat anxiety. Medications within these categories work differently on the brain and have different side effects. Unfortunately, there is not a definitive way of knowing beforehand which medications will be most effective. A person may have to try a few different medications before finding one that is effective. This is not to say that prescribing medications is just educated guesswork. It is important that the physician and patient work closely together in order to determine an appropriate regimen. Counseling or therapy. There are many different approaches to counseling and therapy, so it is important to determine what you are looking for. The two main categories of counseling are cognitive behavioral therapy and insight-oriented therapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy is more focused on the present, looking at current behavior and thought processes, and how to change behavior and thinking that may be contributing to depressive or anxious feelings. Insight-oriented therapy is a longer-term process. It is focused on helping the patient to gain a greater understanding of their unconscious motivations and increase insight into the root of the problem.